Good evening and welcome to our study of December 30th, 2023 of the Common Era. The time is 1921 hours Eastern Standard Time. I'm Ward Green with you again. Today we are doing our study of the C3 article, Crucible of Credible Creed, Chapter 3, Paragraph 7, Little Children. We may recall that chronology compared to genealogy is, as we said in some article, like dating compared to marriage. Yesterday was May 7th, 2012. That is in the article that we're reading. It's still 2023 in today's study, and I suddenly got the idea, May 7th, 2012, to search the genealogy of the Egyptian pharaohs last night. That is May 7th, 2012. Since genealogy is more reliable than dating techniques of other kinds, it should be a better test of the time period in question to determine the validity of the ruling date. The more generations after Amos the First that we can ascertain, the more accurate our calculations will be for the average generation, and the answer should tell us how valid it is. Remember that the average generation for firstborn sons is 27 years, and we saw this average in Charlemagne's family, for example, and in other studies of our own Green family. Tutankhamun is 7 generations after Thutmose I, and the relationship between Thutmose I and Amos I is uncertain. Although Thutmose I may be a son of Amos I, it's unsure. The best we can do here for generations is to use Thutmose I ruling from 1504 BCE and his birth as near to 1554 BCE. The evidence that Thutmose I is born about 60 years before his death stems from the detail, because he died in 1493 and born in 1554 is what we're saying. It's about 60 years. This idea of 60 years old at his death stems from the detail that his son, Thutmose II, is old enough to have had a son, Thutmose III, born before the end of the reign of Thutmose II. And by the way, Thutmose II only ruled for about 3 years. And Thutmose I and II, during the time they ruled Egypt, had reigns spanning about 14 years total. 11 and 3 is 14, right? Ruling dates are given in Chapter 9, the Iron Furnace. From 1504 to 1490, whilst Thutmose I is old enough to have been the commander for the armed forces of the pharaoh who came before him, i.e. Amenhotep I, which is generally accepted. So we have those details, those facts, as 30 might be the earliest age at which a man might serve as a military commander for reasons of maturity. We note that a 1554 BCE birth for Thutmose I also allows him to be old enough during the reign of Amenhotep I, which is 1525 to 1504 BCE, for his service as commander of Pharaoh Amenhotep's troops, as it equally makes Thutmose I unlikely as the son of Amos, who was born in 1560 BCE, ruling from the age of 10 years. It is also noted that there are few military campaigns of record during the rule of Pharaoh Amos' son, Amenhotep, and that his rule, commencing 1525, starts at a young age. Were Thutmose I a younger son of Amos, he could not have been born much before 1540, since we have Amos born about 1560. That would make almost 20 years old at the birth of a younger son, which leaves only 50 years for the next two generations, Thutmose II and Thutmose III, to be born. we have identified Thutmose I as the pharaoh ruling during the exodus of Israel from Egypt. And the pharaoh is described in the Bible as young enough at that time, 1493 in our dating, to make his war chariots ready. It relating that, quote, he took his people with him, unquote. So he was young enough to go to battle himself. There are seven generations given from him to Tutankhamun. Tutankhamun, on the other hand, on the other end, has been determined with a degree of certainty of 99.99% through DNA testing to be a son of Pharaoh Akhenaten, which is, we found out later, that was quite wrong, but it was what was published. Assuming that KB-55 is the mummy of Akhenaten, which was later proven to be false, but it was nearly certain, they thought, but that was the published article on the subject by Zahai Hawass. However, it turned out to be wrong, which footnote 7 mentions there. The tests of that particular fact were completed in 2009. It turned out to be not true that Akhenaten was the father of Tutankhamun, but that the brother of Akhenaten was the father of Tutankhamun. Akhenaten, in turn, is shown to be a son of Amenhotep III, as is his brother. To quote the findings given in National Geographic by Zahai Hawass, he wrote this article in 2010, quote, by comparing just 8 of these variable regions, i.e. of the Y chromosome of male DNA, our team was able to establish with a probability of better than 99.99% that Amenhotep III was the father of the individual in KV-55. So that part's true. But the identification of KV-55 turned out to be false. KV-55 was in turn the father of Tutankhamun. That part we believe still. New computer tomographic scans of the KV-55 mummy also revealed an age-related degeneration in the spine and osteoarthritis in the knees and legs. It appeared that he had died closer to the age of 40 than 25, as originally thought. With the age discrepancy thus resolved, we could conclude that the KV-55 mummy, the son of Amenhotep III and Ty, and the father of Tutankhamun, is almost certainly Akhenaten, which it turned out was actually false. It was the brother of Akhenaten based on this footnote 7 explains it here. Actually, this is an error corrected by Belmonte in DNA, Wine, and Eclipses, page 431, Anthropological Notebooks 19 Supplement 2013, as a discovery made in 2010 by independent researcher Kate Fizakerly pertaining to the DNA of the daughters of Tutankhamun and Ankhesenamun. And Ankhesenamun's DNA is not consistent with KV-55 being her father, despite the fact that Ankhesenamun is believed to have been the daughter of Akhenaten. This implies strongly that KV-55 is not Akhenaten, not Akhenaten, though KV-55 is Tut's father. And KV-55, as was shown there, could not be Akhenaten because the wife of Tut was the daughter of Akhenaten. And she was not the daughter of KV-55, as was shown from the DNA. A number of specialists shared Belmonte's opinion that Kate Fizakerly was correct, that is. The implication is that KV-55 is a son of Amenhotep III, as the DNA already showed, but a different son. Of remaining available choices, there's currently only Smenkhkari, younger brother of Akhenaten, and the coffins, of the three nested coffins of Amenhotep, his face, followed by a person who doesn't look like Akhenaten, but is probably, therefore, Smenkhkari, and that coffin is followed by the face of what should be King Tut. You know, it was Tut's coffin. It was three nested coffins, which we published in the History of Babylon Part 2, I believe, is where that is. I looked it up recently, just the other day, actually yesterday maybe. I looked it up very recently. That's all for the Crucible article today. Proverbs 11 and 24 is our proverb for today, little children. There exists the one that is scattering and yet is being increased, also the one that is keeping back from what is right, but it results only in want. 1 Kings chapter 5, and Hiram the king of Tyre proceeded to send his servants to Solomon, for he had heard that it was he that they had anointed as king in place of his father, for a lover of David, Hiram had always proved to be. In turn, Solomon sent to Hiram, saying, "You yourself well know that David my father was not able to build a house to the name of Jehovah his God because of the warfare with which they surrounded him, until Jehovah put them under the soles of his feet. And now Jehovah my God has given me rest all around. There is no resister, and there is nothing bad happening. And here I am thinking of building a house to the name of Jehovah my God, just as Jehovah promised to David my father, saying, 'Your son, whom I shall put upon your throne in place of you, he is the one that will build the house to my name. And now command that they cut for me cedars from Lebanon, and my servants themselves will prove to be with your servants, and the wages of your servants I shall give to you according to all that you may say. For you yourself well know that there is among us no one knowing how to cut trees like the Sidonians.' And it came about that as soon as Hiram heard the words of Solomon, he began to rejoice greatly, and he went on to say, 'Blessed is Jehovah today, in that he has given David a wise son over this numerous people.' Accordingly, Hiram sent to Solomon, saying, 'I have heard what you sent to me. For my part, I shall do all your delight in the matter of timbers of cedar trees and timbers of juniper trees. My servants themselves will bring them down out of Lebanon to the sea, and I, for my part, shall put them in log rafts to go by sea clear to the place that you will send me notice of, and I shall certainly have them broken up there. And you, for your part, will carry them, and you, for your part, will do my delight by giving the food for my household.' So Hiram became a giver of timbers of cedar trees and timbers of juniper trees to Solomon according to all his delight. And Solomon, for his part, gave Hiram 20,000 core measures of wheat as food supplies for his household and 20 core measures of beaten out oil. That was what Solomon kept giving Hiram year by year. And Jehovah, for his part, gave Solomon wisdom, just as he had promised him. And there came to be peace between Hiram and Solomon, and both of them proceeded to conclude a covenant. And King Solomon kept bringing up those conscripted for forced labor out of all Israel, and those conscripted for forced labor amounted to 30,000 men, and he would send them to Lebanon in shifts of 10,000 a month. For a month they would continue in Lebanon, for 2 months at their homes, and Adoniram was over those conscripted for forced labor. And Solomon came to have 70,000 burden bearers and 80,000 cutters in the mountain, besides Solomon's princely deputies, who were over the work, 3,300 foremen over the people who were active in the work. Accordingly, the king commanded that they should quarry great stones, expensive stones, to lay the foundation of the house with hewn stones. So Solomon's builders and Hiram's builders and the Gebalites did the cutting, and they kept preparing the timbers and the stones to build the house. So they needed to work to cut these large foundation stones for the temple of Jehovah, of course. It sounds like the Sidonians did the cutting of the trees, but Solomon's men were the ones who cut the stones. And they would work 1 month on, 2 months off. So evidently it was very hard work if they took that much time to rest in between their shifts of work. Ezekiel chapter 7, and the word of Jehovah continued to occur to me, saying, "And as for you, O son of man, this is what the sovereign Lord Jehovah has said to the soil of Israel. An end, the end has come upon the four extremities of the land, or the wings of the land, four wings. Now the end is upon you, and I must send my anger against you, and I will judge you according to your ways and bring upon you all your detestable things. And my eye will not feel sorry for you, neither will I feel compassion, for upon you I shall bring your own ways, and in the midst of you your own detestable things will come to be. And you people will have to know that I am Jehovah. This is what the sovereign Lord Jehovah has said, a calamity, a unique calamity. Look, it is coming. An end itself must come. The end must come. It must awaken for you. Look, it is coming. The garland must come to you, O inhabiter of the land. The time must come. The day is near. There is confusion and not the shouting of the mountains. Now, shortly, I shall pour out my rage upon you, and I will bring my anger against you to its finish. And I will judge you according to your ways and bring upon you all your detestable things. Neither will my eye feel sorry, nor shall I feel compassion. According to your ways shall I do the bringing upon you yourself, and your own detestable things will come to be right in the midst of you. And you people will have to know that I am Jehovah doing the smiting. Look, the day, look, it is coming. The garland has gone forth, the rod has blossomed. Presumptuousness has sprouted. Violence itself has risen up into a rod of wickedness. It is not from them, nor is it from their wealth, and it is not from their own selves, nor is there any eminency in them. The time must come, the day must arrive. As regards the buyer, let him not rejoice, and as regards the seller, let him not go into mourning, for there is hot feeling against all its crowd. For to what was sold, the seller himself will not return, while their life is yet among the living ones. For the vision is for all its crowd. No one will return, and they will not possess themselves each one of his own life by his own error. They have blown the trumpet, and there has been a preparing of everybody, but there is no one going to the battle, because my hot feeling is against all its crowd. The sword is outside, and the pestilence and the famine are inside. Whoever is in the field, by the sword he will die, and whoever are in the city, famine and pestilence themselves will devour them. And their escapees will certainly make their escape and become on the mountains like the doves of the valleys, all of which are moaning, each one in his own error. As for all the hands, they keep dropping down, and as for all the knees, they keep dripping with water. And they have girded on sackcloth, and shuddering has covered them, and on all faces there is shame, and on all their heads there is baldness. Into the streets they will throw their very silver, and an abhorrent thing their own gold will become. Neither their silver nor their gold will be able to deliver them in the day of Jehovah's fury. Their souls they will not satisfy, and their intestines they will not fill, for it has become a stumbling block causing their error, and the decoration of one's ornament. One has set it as reason for pride, and their detestable images, their disgusting things, they have made with it. That is why I will make it to them an abhorrent thing, and I will give it into the hand of the strangers for plunder, and to the wicked ones of the earth for spoil, and they will certainly profane it. And I shall have to turn away my face from them, and they will actually profane my concealed place, and into it robbers will really come and profane it. Make the chain, for the land itself has become full of blood-stained judgment, and the city itself has become full of violence. And I will bring in the worst ones of the nations, and they will certainly take possession of their houses. And I will cause the pride of the strong ones to cease, and their sanctuaries must be profaned. There will come anguish, and they will certainly seek peace, but there will be none. There will come adversity upon adversity, and there will occur report upon report, and people will actually seek a vision from a prophet, and the law itself will perish from a priest and counsel from elderly men. The king himself will go into mourning. Even a chieftain will clothe himself with desolation, and the very hands of the people of the land will get disturbed. According to their way I shall act toward them, and with their judgments I shall judge them, and they will have to know that I am Jehovah. That's the end of Ezekiel chapter 7. A very, very severe judgment being pronounced upon Israel. The decoration of one's ornament, verse 20, one has set it as reason for pride, and they used it to make their detestable images, their idols, in other words, which were disgusting to Jehovah. And not only that, Jehovah was going to give that into the hands of strangers, but also he was going to give his concealed place into the hand of robbers, right? He was going to profane his concealed place because these people were doing what he found to be disgusting. His own people were doing disgusting things. And now, the book of 3 John, chapter 1. The older man to Gaius, the beloved, whom I truly love. Beloved one, I pray that in all things you may be prospering and having good health, just as your soul is prospering. For I rejoiced very much when brothers came and bore witness to the truth you hold, just as you go on walking in the truth. No greater cause for thankfulness do I have than these things, that I should be hearing that my children go on walking in the truth. Beloved one, you are doing a faithful work in whatever you do for the brothers, and strangers at that, who have borne witness to your love before the congregation. These you will please send on their way in a manner worthy of God, for it was in behalf of his name that they went forth, not taking anything from people of the nations. We therefore are under obligation to receive such persons hospitably, that we may become fellow workers in the truth. I wrote something to the congregation, but Diotrephes, who likes to have the first place among them, does not receive anything from us with respect. That is why, if I come, I will call to remembrance his works, which he goes on doing, chattering about us with wicked words, also not being content with these things. Neither does he himself receive the brothers with respect, and those who are wanting to receive them he tries to hinder and to throw out of the congregation. Beloved one, be an imitator not of what is bad, but of what is good. He that does good originates with God. He that does bad has not seen God. Demetrius has had witness borne to him by them all, and by the truth itself. In fact, we also are bearing witness, and you know that the witness we give is true. I had many things to write you, yet I do not wish to go on writing you with ink and pen. But I am hoping to see you directly, and we shall speak face to face. May you have peace. The friends send you their greetings. Give my greetings to the friends by name. That's the end of the letter of 3 John. That concludes our Bible reading for today, little children. We're going to be studying the genealogy of King Tut in more detail. Tomorrow, I believe, we're going to arrive at something more specific with regard to the number of years in one generation of those generations. Or maybe it's not tomorrow. Let me see now. Where is it? Is it much further on? Where is it now? Did we show it already? Here it is, yeah. Right. Yes, we showed it right here. No, it's we didn't read it yet. It is the next day's study. I was looking at the footnotes at the end. That's why I missed it. It's going to be interesting, but we had this arrival at the birth of Tut in 1361, which is probably slightly different, because it's slightly different than the date we now believe Tut was born, but it's going to make this number, even if it's, see, we had assumed in this calculation at the time of the Crucible article that Tut was born in 1361, because we had his year one somewhere around 1350. But we now believe, based on the subsequent articles that were written, that 1357 might be the year one of Tut more accurately. That would be 7 years earlier. Since there are seven generations, that would lower this average 27.6 to 26.6. So that would still be very close to 27 years per generation, which is very close to what we expect it should be for the firstborn son, which is typically what the king is. The king of the next generation is typically the firstborn son who inherits the kingship. So it's very close to being what we expect for the average generation of firstborn sons. Anyway, that's worth mentioning. And now we still have 6 minutes and a little more remaining in our study. But we're going to hopefully talk about this tomorrow anyway. We're going to read that in faith. And the funeral mask of Tut, that's interesting, because that was something which was an interesting item, but it wasn't believed to be original to Tut himself. This was a mask that was believed to have been subsumed by Tut from Nefertiti, the wife of the wife of Akhenaten. Nefertiti died, and probably she ruled just before Tut did, and that or very, 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 very short time before Tut ruled. Nefertiti was the surviving queen of Akhenaten, and her funerary mask, because Tut was so young, they didn't have a lot of time to make all of the funeral regalia for Tut, so they borrowed this mask from Nefertiti and used it for Tut. Apparently that was one of the things. If you read the article, The Uncut Tut, or there's another article that we wrote also with regard to the kings of Egypt that might have something to do with that. But let me see now, where can I find that? That was a later article, so let me try and find out what that article would be here. Here it is. This is a list of articles, right? So let me jump down to the end here. Yeah. Right about here. The Uncut Tut was one that was written. True was another one, yeah. The article called True, and the article The Uncut Tut would be the one that has more about King Tut, which is a short form of the name Tutankhamun, in case you don't know, little ones. King Tut is also Tutankhamun, as he's known. He was very young, and he was a warrior. And the details of his life are very interesting, and most people don't know anything about it, which is why the article was written, The Uncut Tut, written by yours truly. And the article True was a further refinement of the chronology, and then the article Preservation was written again to highlight some of the important factors of the early chronology, such as the time of Joshua and so on, of the Jewish people after their exodus from Egypt. And we have all these articles from Joseph. We have then Joseph and Own, which is article number 7, and we have Redemption of the Phoenix, Moses, the Ark of Urartu, the Crucible of Credible Creed, the article we are now studying, and then came before chronology history of Babylon, then Trojan War, then Wild Road, which we also have studied in the past, then the Uncut Tut, then True, and then B, or Preservation, and then Born or Raised Messiah, which was the most recent article, number 18. So the articles so far that we've studied have been Born or Raised Messiah. We studied Wild Road Ahead to History prior to that. And we're now studying The Crucible of Credible Creed, which is one of the most foundational articles, as it includes the chronology of the judges of Israel, which is so convincing. But there are so many. Oh, Trojan War covers some interesting things. For example, the Ugarit solar eclipse, I believe, is in that article. The coffin, the nested coffins of King Tut, is in the before article, The History of Babylon, Part 2. But we're just about out of time. I'm just thinking, what do I want to say? I probably should speak a little more about nutrition. The thing about nutrition, okay? You don't want to consult somebody after you get sick. What you want to do is pursue your health at all times so you never get sick. And if you do get sick, because you're pursuing your health at all times, you're much better able to ascertain what's causing you to be sick, because you're always pursuing health every single day. So if you get sick, it's probably because you took the wrong combination of food or whatever. But you know, infections can be handled with appropriate amounts of vitamin C, which we've talked about many times. But if we're pursuing our health every day, we're not going to be consulting people who specialize in illness. It just won't be a practical approach, because it will take time away from our pursuit of health. We need all our energy to be spent on the pursuit of health. Every day we need to intensely be concerned with what we're eating and how it's affecting our health. That's the pursuit of health. We're not going to be waiting for illness. Never be sitting around. It's not good to be waiting to get sick and doing nothing about health. Pursuit of health is a completely different thing from the treatment of illness. It's the pursuit of health. Totally different thing. It's much harder to do it, perhaps, but it's much easier, considering the hopelessness of dealing with illness when you don't know anything about health. So that's all for today's study, little children. It's December 30th, 2023 of the Common Era, and the time is 1954 hours Eastern Standard Time. That 1954 BCE, that was the birth of Joseph in the genealogy, actually. I'm Ward Green. I love you very much. And in my behalf, this is Gully, my wind-up chronograph, and this is Cassie, my electronic digital watch, saying bye for now.